Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod.
A killer ghost. I'm Jason Horton.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town.
Mid-19th century, a tenement on Campo Lane in Sheffield, UK, set the scene for one of the wildest, strangest, and most outlandish hauntings the world has ever known. Called the Campo Lane Ghost, this story involves sensationalist reporting, angry, drunken, Mormon mobs, Satanism, buried bodies, buried treasure, and death by haunting. But don't take my word for it. The report in the Sheffield Times sums this story up nicely. Quote, "This ghost story is one of the prettiest we've heard for some time. It has appeared to three persons. The first it alarmed, the second it threw into fits, and the third it killed. What more can be needed to convince the most skeptical? Today on Ghost Town, we're not here to convince the skeptics, only to explore the bizarre existence and dramatic narrative of the Campo Lane ghost." First, I need to say that according to the Sheffield Star and Steel City Ghost Tours, Sheffield, UK is still one of the most haunted British cities, boasting over 3,500 ghosts dating from the 17th century up until today. The story we're telling takes place in 1855 on Campo Lane, one of the last medieval streets of Sheffield. Later, in the 1920s, on account of it being the hub of English organized crime, Campo Lane would become the most violent street in the most violent United Kingdom city. In February of 1855, 48-year-old Hannah Rawlinson and her laborer husband, John Rawlinson, rented a unit in the Park District of Sheffield on Campo Lane. Along with them came Hannah's sister and the couple's friend, a peculiar widower named Harriet Ward. It's also interesting to note that the whole bunch were devout Mormons, practical, working-class people. The Rawlinson couple was also not unfamiliar with stress or heartache in their lives. Their eldest son died in a Sheffield coal mining accident. This is all to say that the Rawlinsons and their circle were pious, grounded, no-frills kind of people, which makes what happened next so much wilder. The four wanted a new, fresh start, so they rented the property on Campo Lane, which included living quarters, along with a first-floor shop and a shared cellar with a neighboring unit. After they moved in, Ward, again a Mormon widower, already claimed that she began seeing her dead husband's ghost and heard rapping around the unit. And heard, quote, rapping around the unit. The Rawlinsons' neighbors, you know, the ones that they shared the cellar with, were a family called the Favells. Apparently, they had been hearing, quote, strange sounds which might have their origin in supernatural agency at the home for many years before. That family, also buttoned-up Mormons, quote, set it down as the effects of the imagination. Nevertheless, they grew so fearful that none of the Favells would go into their own cellar or kitchen after dark, where the origins of the sounds lay. However, at midnight one night, Harriet Ward entered the cellar on an errand. From their side of the building, the Favells heard a loud scream and they rushed downstairs. There, the Favell husband, John, and his wife found Ward leaning against a table, quote, her features rigid and her eyes fixed upon a point in the room where she claimed a ghost could be seen. The Favells, perplexed, couldn't see anything themselves and had absolutely no idea what she was looking at. Ward then fainted, and when she came to, according to Sheffield Times, described seeing an apparition, quote, a grim-featured old woman wearing a long white nightgown and a full bordered cap. In the next 24 hours, Ward reported seeing this apparition no less than 5 times, both awake and in her dreams. In one very vivid dream, the woman in white, the ghost, led Ward to a, quote, purse of gold buried under the flagstones of the cellar floor. When she told her neighbor John Favell this whole dream, the patriarch of the Favells, he jokingly said, that's all we want. Let the old ghost come now. Ward's visions continued into the next day, when John and Hannah Rawlinson, Ward and their landlady, had lunch at the Favells' unit. During the meal, Ward left to go to the cellar and had another screaming fit. When everyone ran down to the cellar to see what was happening, Ward declared that she could see the ghost on the cellar steps again. But this time, its face and neck were covered in bloodstains. Ward then said the ghost appeared to disappear in the same corner of the cellar kitchen where she had dreamed of the purse of gold. The day after that, John Favell, John Rawlinson, and Harriet Ward attended a church meeting at the Mormon Hall of Science, where, as you might very well imagine, the Campo Lane ghost was the main topic of conversation. A large group, including church elders, got pretty curious about Ward's visitations, so everyone that night trucked over to the Favell-Rawlinson residence to see whatever was happening there for themselves. This is where things get, if you can imagine, even weirder. In a bizarre turn that nobody saw coming. We'll tell you what went down after this break.
Hi, hello, how are you?
Hello.
How are you doing?
How's it going out there?
Oh.
Going good?
Yeah.
Going bad?
Oh.
Going right in the middle?
Lateral moves.
Yeah.
That's all we can
That's
ask.
That's right. Just keep on flatlining.
We want to say hello to anyone who's listening, supporting us, spreading the good word of Ghost Town. Thank you so much.
Hello and thank you.
We appreciate it.
We do.
And, ooh, baby, we appreciate our government. The mayors. Oh, they do some haunting of their own.
Do they now?
Oh, yeah.
Do they now?
Yes, they have a one-track mind to govern.
Okay.
But they like to have a little fun.
Ooh.
They like
night?
To do, or sometimes during the day, you'll find out.
Yeah, 10 a.m.
They like to do a little haunting of their own.
What, pray tell, is that all about?
This mayor goes back and haunts her high school, making references that the kids of today do not understand. So the hauntings, they're just like, hey, but you can't find your sidekick. And they're like, we don't know what that is.
Yeah.
Why are you?
Cool. Palm Pilot?
Yeah.
Huh?
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah. Your BlackBerry is on the fritz.
Yeah.
They're like, we don't know what that is.
Licorice Pizza? You guys seen that movie? Or you know what a 48 or a 76 is?
Yeah. No?
They're like, no.
Nah. All right. Well, that's Ashley Mattson.
Hello.
Ooh, this mayor haunts the mall she used to work at.
Oh.
She's like, hey, what's going on at Sam Goody and Learners?
Ooh.
They're like, what? They're like, what the hell is Learners?
Huh?
Even
what's
this,
a mall?
Even this ghost is like, I don't even know what Learners
They're
is.
They're like, if there's an Eataly there, then I'm in. But if they ain't no Eataly.
No, there's no Eataly.
No, there's an Orange Julius.
Yeah, there's an Orange Julius. There's an Old Navy that's just hanging on by a thread.
Just great. It's like a war zone in there.
And everyone there is like, we don't.
Yeah.
Listen, we're at a dying mall. Get off our back.
It's like,
ooh, that's Cat Joseph.
Hello.
This ghost is haunting a modern prom, more with references that are totally, and they're like, hey, DJ, play some Torn by Natalie
Imbruglia.
Yeah, which is a cover.
Yeah,
not
which is, it's not even original.
Original.
The original is pretty good.
The original's pretty good.
I would say, but.
And everyone there is like, we don't know who that is. We don't care that it's a cover.
Yeah.
We don't know what the original reference, so we don't even need the deep cuts of what you're saying.
Mm-mm.
That's Kelly Mann.
Hello.
This mayor's haunting a Chapel Roan concert. And they're like, huh? Wouldn't you rather listen to something else that's cool? What about some Robin?
Yeah, it was one of my first actually her single before that was one of my first CDs.
Oh, it was a more pop, I forget, it was
Show
pop.
Me Love.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Then she got real dark.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Both good songs, really good.
Great but artist.
They're like, what about some Robin?
And
what about some Kylie Minogue? And they're just like, we're just going to see
like
Chapel
my
Roan.
My grandma's into them.
And they're like, no, but also people, way younger people. And they're like, not really. They're like, trust me, I'm a ghost. I know. Mm-mm. It's Casey Weber.
Hello.
This ghost is at a weed store, but is haunting you saying, I used to have to buy weed from some shady person. Dealer. Yeah, from like a drug dealer.
Out of a Mazda.
Yeah, it's like at a...
Yep.
It's just... And they're just like, we'll just go in there, we buy it. And they're like, ooh.
It's but really no. good quality.
Yeah. Yeah, they're like, no, you should be paying a lot. You don't know what it is.
Yeah. All stems.
Yeah. And they're just like, no, everything is just here. Like,
we're going to get it in like beautiful gummy form, cotton candy form, and iced teas.
And they're like, he's like, no, that's not the way you're supposed to do it. And they're like, yeah, it is the way we're supposed to do it. Why are you? And the ghost is like, I'm resentful of that. I used to have to jump through a lot of hoops for this. Mm-hmm. That's Matthew Clemens-Leray.
Hello.
And that's not a commentary on whether Matthew Clemens-Leray partakes or not.
I mean, I don't think you have to say that, but that's nice of you to say.
Listen, the ghost, though, is there to haunt. Is not there to be like...
focused.
I don't think the kids are going to like, prove it. Prove you do drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And Matthew Clemens, right, the ghost, is going to be like, I don't need to
I don't
bite.
Take a urine test. I'm a ghost. I don't make urine.
Oh, this ghost. They haunt Netflix headquarters.
Ooh.
And they're just like, but isn't it so much better to go to a video store and have one copy of a movie and then be like, oh, when's it going to come back? Like, when are you going to get the movie back?
Come back like, on Wednesday?
Wednesday, but if you guys, it's late, it's like, when are I going to come back? It's like, whatever. And then if I bring it back late, it's $85? Mm. Why is it $85?
Yeah. Somehow it's wet.
Yeah. And then the Netflix people are like, we tried to buy Blockbuster, and Blockbuster was like, nah.
Mm-mm.
And then now they probably regret it. I'm sure there's more nuance than that, but that is a fact, I think.
That's a short Ghost Town episode right there.
They offered to buy each other, and it was probably a mistake.
Yeah. Well, we will do an episode on that. That'll
and Netflix is like, yeah, no, we like what we're doing here, even though we got our own problems, because we're spending money left and right on things that suck.
Bad investments. Bad investments. Just really...
Every movie looks almost the same.
Yeah. Happening. It's a dump of content that... Nobody watches. Yeah.
And they're like, ooh, don't you wish you stuck to Blockbuster? He's like, no, this is still way more profitable with the times.
Like, we're going
to
make four other iterations of X's Who Kill.
Yeah. So I think we're good.
Uh-huh.
You know who says they're not good? Marissa Rothermel.
Hello.
And then our, I was going to say Gouverneur, but like Boovener.
Gouverneur.
Our Boovener. Ooh. Who haunts everything.
Everything.
From that jet plane in the sky. Just everyone's waiting, and she just sends it like boop over your shoulder, and it's just like get to work, no breaks. I love it.
Productivity goes.
It's like a sweatshop
where
the world is a sweatshop,
just
cranking out and grinding out materials and content. Just keep making crap, keep making crap, and the second you stop making crap, you get haunted to death.
Boom.
Yeah, boom. You're just like, I already don't get health insurance or any paid time off. I'm already very fragile. Oh. But our governor is like,
she's like,
boo hoo hoo.
She's like, my world. It's my world.
Yes.
I just haunt you day in and day out.
Yeah, both as a ghost and as a person.
Mm-hmm. That's right. She haunts her own self as a human.
Yeah.
It's so cyclical. It's crazy. It's like Inception.
That can only come from one person, our governor,
Avian Noble.
If you want no ads, no chit-chat, bonus episodes, just the good stuff, 7 days free, head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod.
We're back on Campo Lane, where a large group of Sheffield residents are gathering, wondering if they'll see anything weird, a ghost, a dream, anything. By this part of the investigation into the Campo Lane ghost, two points in Ward's story become conflated. The dream of buried gold and the ghostly sightings. They seem to merge into each other and become one idea, that a ghost was trying to signal that their body was buried in the cellar part of the Campo Lane apartments. So by word of mouth and kind of toxic crowd mentality, the dream of money and the hauntings became a kind of murder narrative. A journalist from the Sheffield Times reflected on how this all happened, which doesn't give us many answers per se, but maybe a little bit of clarity. They say, quote, "Of course there could be no ghost without a murder, and therefore all the gossips have declared that ghosts' aim is to obtain a Christian burial and bring to justice, if still living, the perpetrators of the crime." Ghostly dreams and visions now evolved into a kind of local murder mystery. To that end, and fed up with all of it, John Favell began removing the flagstone from the floor of the cellar as two dozen Mormons and neighbors waited outside and in the downstairs storefront, wondering just what the hell Favell would find. What happened next, I get from the proceedings at the inquest presided over by the Sheffield coroner, Henry Badger. The jury at the inquest was told that as midnight approached, the crowd was growing, again wondering what Favell would find, or who. Annoyed by the influx of visitors, Mrs. Favell asked her sister to cover the window of the cellar with a blind so no one could peer in. So Mrs. Favell's sister went from the storefront down the cellar steps, but got cold feet. Fearing she might see something down there, she decided that maybe the task was not right for her. At that point, Hannah Rawlinson was like, fine, I'll do it, and took the blind and went downstairs, accompanied by her landlady, you know, for moral support. After putting the blind on the cellar window, Hannah Rawlinson turned around to face the cellar steps and was immediately seized by fear. According to a journalist at the Sheffield and Rotherham Independent, Hannah initially fainted but regained consciousness for a brief interval during which she said, quote, she had seen a female form dressed in white on the stairs, that it seemed to approach her suddenly, became a substance without a form, and vanished as it rushed past her. Then Hannah Rawlinson went unconscious again. Hannah was then dragged into the storefront room and many attempts were made to revive her. At that time, Harriet Ward, of course, went to the cellar and had her own unique journey there, which is pretty on brand for her, as you all know. Coming back up to the first floor, with everyone surrounding the unconscious Hannah Rawlinson, Ward announced to the crowd that she could also see the ghost of the white lady at the top of the cellar stairs, telling the now even more keyed up crowd that the apparition opened its white nightdress to reveal deep gashes in its neck and bloodstains. Ward challenged, in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, to say what troubled the ghost, and she made no reply but beckoned for Ward to follow her. At this point, Ward says that she began to communicate telepathically with the spirit, who finally revealed its identity. The spirit told her it was the restless soul of Elizabeth Johnson, murdered by her nephew, William Dawson, on March 26, 1722, and was buried deep beneath the cellar, quote, in a watery grave. The final message from this ghost was, the garret and the cellar are now marked with my blood. You must quit this house because William Dawson will trouble you if you don't. The conversation ended with the sudden disappearance of the ghost, quote, whereupon Ward fainted and remained insensible for about a quarter of an hour. She regained consciousness, but Hannah Rawlinson did not. She was taken to her bed where she died the following afternoon. An inquest that we talked about quickly proceeded into her death, along with the insane events of the past couple days. On February 27th, the jury questioned a number of those who were present at the scene in Campo Lane. The jury members, quote, could not make anything of the ghost story and returned a verdict of death through natural causes. Rawlinson was described by the coroner as a, quote, strong, healthy woman laboring under no disease as far as is known. But he concluded that her death had, quote, certainly been caused by the fright she had received on the previous day, up to which time she was in perfect health and spirits. Hannah's death certificate, held by Sheffield City Registry Office, records her cause of death as, unbelievably, quote, a sudden death in a fit believed to have been brought on by fright. Contemporary accounts of the Campo Lane ghost mention that the Sheffield rumor mill claimed these ghost experiences were actually inspired by satanic forces, which makes some sense, as shortly after the inquest verdict, it was reported by the Sheffield and Rotherham Independent that Ward had been excommunicated by a unanimous vote of the Mormon congregation, who had decided, quote, the apparition emanated from his satanic majesty and hinted that wonderful things may be experienced in those marvelous times. For the Favell family, who never found a body in the cellar, by the way, and who had lived at Campo Lane for way too long, the death of Hannah Rawlinson was the final straw. They abandoned their haunted home and moved to another rented dwelling nearby. On the evening of Tuesday, March 6, 1855, an angry and some say drunken mob of 300 people gathered outside the haunted premises on Campo Lane, blocking movement on the road outside. Windows were broken, lead was stolen from the roof, and an outhouse was demolished. Some of the mob broke into the haunted property itself and began hauling up flagstones from the cellar, whatever flagstones were left. Finally, the police were called and dispersed the mob, leaving two badly injured. Even back then, the incident was called, quote, uncouth and vulgar, a disgraceful mix of superstition and a lack of civility. The editors of the Sheffield Free Press and Sheffield and Rotherham Independent finally declared enough was enough. As you can tell, they reported a lot on this because we're drawing a lot from their journalism. They said definitively that they did not believe in ghosts and did not want to see property damaged and or law-abiding people robbed or assaulted by those who did. And they certainly didn't think any person died of a haunting, despite what the coroners had recorded. These newspapers were scathing in their criticism of what they called the Campo Lane delusion and directed most of their blame upon, quote, credulous Mormonites. On March 17, 1855, the Sheffield and Rotherham Independent published what it claimed was the one and only explanation for this whole Campo Lane situation. Quote, we have been informed that some of the alleged appearances have resulted from the operations with a magic lantern by the occupiers of adjacent premises, who knew that Favell and his family were Mormonites, and were determined to have a lark at their experience. In essence, the newspaper believed some kind of light trick was being played on the residents of Campo Lane, but went into no further detail as to who it was, how it was done, or where it came from, and kind of why. But much later, Henry Pawson, editor of the Sheffield Times, the city newspaper that was first to publish the story of the Campo Lane ghost, and who, again, we've quoted many times in this episode, declared that despite his newspaper's viewpoints, he himself remained open-minded about the whole question of supernatural activity in Sheffield and beyond. He said, quote, the popular belief in ghosts is not extinct, even in a large town like Sheffield, and is proved by these tragic circumstances. We leave to the ingenious reader to explain away these appearances, fancied or real, upon rational grounds. We content ourselves with telling the tale as 'twas told to us, satisfied that we have detailed for public delectation a ghost story which is far too good to remain hidden in obscurity. On that last point, Mr. Pawson, we are definitely in agreement.